Our next speaker, like the other speakers, really needs no introduction. I think of him as Mr. Direct Methods, and he's going to tell us something of the history of Direct Methods.
I think I'll be speaking without a microphone on my phone.
Hello, hello, hello.
No. Okay. I think the batteries have probably run out. Anyway, hello. I'm going to pour myself some water and pretend it's something stronger, and that will keep me going. There's only one thing worse than having to prepare a history talk, and that is preparing an after dinner speech. But as Sven mentioned at the beginning, we're doing both tonight, in fact. So this is four after dinner talks. Last night you only got one from Beresford, and tonight you've got four. So I've now got to find an apparatus for. Here we go. So my history is quite a lot more recent than Beresford's there. He started in 1882, and as you'll see, I'm quite a lot more recent. So I'm going to go through an outline of sparse direct methods, and I'll start in ancient times. But ancient times is defined as pre-1970 or pre-1968. So that's not too ancient. Then the birth, and that birth will be in 1968, and you'll see how I tried to justify it. Then we'll have the infancy, and I would claim to be one of the infants in this case, and that's running in the 1970s. Then the turbulent teens, which is the late 1970s, early 1980s. Then maturity, which some of us are still aspiring to, I guess. Some with better success than others, which is the 70s. And of course, what comes after that is rather sad. Yeah. It's a question mark. and it really is a question mark. But I'm going to try and address these businesses. Now, Margaret didn't actually tell me off as much as she did at Beresford, but I will keep my eye on the clock, and I'm quite sure I'm going to get through all of this in less than an hour. So here we have, by direct methods, I'm really referring to Gauss elimination, but any other factorization method would be quite fine. But the important thing is to find where this laser thing is. Okay, the important thing is that we're always going to be trying to keep sparsity in whatever factorization we do. So the important thing is that L and U, in this case, for the LU factorization, are going to be sparse. In fact, in the rest of the talk, you'll probably not see any more equations here. I took history at the as the sort of governing feature, so you'll see people and dates, but not really any more equations, I'm afraid. So by ancient times, I mean, large systems were solved, but they weren't as large as nowadays, but they were still quite large. And they were solved by iterative methods in the old days. Very simple iterative methods, relaxation methods, the SOR methods, and related techniques. So this was all predating, well, this is ancient times, predating the birth of sparse direct methods. And if you look at standard, present-day standard sparse metrics books, they don't really have reference to papers before about 1950, and even these papers are things like the graph theory. There was the Woodbury. Giving away some secrets there. Various graph and representations and that type of stuff. So there wasn't really anything being done, which I think is really related to sparse direct methods before the birth. Yeah. This is interesting. This is from 1953, I believe, and it's not a very large matrix, 16 by 16. I've got one or two eyesight tests for people in the back of the room, but don't be too upset if you can't make out all these numbers there, because we're not too worried about that. But you can see, there's a lot of zeros there. It is a kind of sparse matrix, But even this matrix wasn't solved by a direct method, not even a dense direct method. Well, it was, but it did take, as it says here, 8 hours on the 604 calculating punch. And in fact, iterative methods were used on this matrix and were far faster than a direct method at the time, so in 53. So not only were sparse direct methods not being used then, but direct methods were hard to be used. I was thinking of actually keeping the flavour of this in monochrome for ancient times, but I can't resist putting some colours in. So I gave up in trying to do that, and now we've got a bit more colour here, which hopefully helps to keep me awake, even if it doesn't keep you. So one of the first papers to appear, which kind of still, this is pre-birth, right? We haven't really come to conception yet, I don't think, but maybe just getting that way. It was a long gestation period, as you'll see, but back in about 61, Seymour Parter had a paper in Siam Review. Siam Review, linking the graphs and sparse elimination. And allegedly, well, Michele Benzi tells me that he'd heard that it had a terrible trouble getting published because it was essentially too simple, really. And it is very simple, but it was never talked about really before then. Back in these pre-birth days, the two areas which had an interest and which drove really sparse direct methods were linear programming, in particular the simplex method, and solving stiff ordinary differential equations. And we'll address these two in separate slides in a minute. But the other area strongly represented in the ancient times, and this is the 60s now we're talking about, were power systems. The Bill Tinney, who worked for the Bonneville Power Administration, and his colleagues, they in fact had the first papers on what's now called minimum degree, a big ordering method for sparse direct methods back in these days, still referenced a lot. In electrical networks and circuit design, this was issues like tearing systems, partitioning systems, that type of thing. And in chemical engineering, where you had block triangular forms, this type of thing, again in the 60s. So these were really areas using sparse techniques, but it hadn't developed as a proper area then. So let's just have a comment on the stiff ordinary differential equations. The issue there was, for ODEs, the method of choice in the past had been explicit methods, but when you had stiff equations, so at different time scales, different eigenspectrum, if you like, implicit methods were needed, and that's what really gave rise to the need to solve large, sparse, unsymmetric, usually, systems. So you have systems of this form here, and because of the choice of the alpha and h and the j being the Jacobian of the system, you could have really nasty sparse matrices. And the two people who were very much involved trying to solve these were Werner Linniger in IBM Yorktown and Alan Curtis. And that's going to feed in, Alan Curtis at Harvard, going to feed into the early development of sparse direct methods. In linear programming, simplex method was initially developed by George Danzig, not particularly looking at sparsity early on, but fairly soon they had this product form of the inverse, which you can show not to be that efficient for sparsity, but nevertheless can be implemented as a sparse algorithm. And Orchard Hayes was one of the first programmers who actually programmed sparse LP codes. This RAND corporation that I kind of only found out about by looking up on the web seemed to be an amazing place, and there was a tremendous amount of very exciting work being done there, particularly in this area, but not only. But the main paper, from our point of view, from the sparse direct community, was Harry Markowitz's elimination form of the inverse paper, with the Markowitz criterion for ordering a general unsymmetric matrix so that these LU factors that I mentioned at the beginning were kept sparse. And I'm not lecturing on sparse direct methods as such, so I don't want to talk about any of the details of these ordering schemes, but this one, in some way or another, is still the main method for unsymmetric systems. Now, Harry Markowitz got a Nobel Prize, of course not in mathematics, as couldn't be the case, but in economics for some work in portfolio. He didn't get a Nobel Prize for that paper, sadly, but for some later work in portfolio theory. The other person that should be mentioned from our side, no, not our side, which side of Atlantic? We're in America today, aren't we? Yeah. Okay. From the other side of the Atlantic, it was Martin Beale, who was doing a lot of sparse programming in these ancient days. It says that they're programming, but we're still under the heading of ancient days. Oh, and that's a picture of Harry Markowitz, who apparently is still, as far as I can tell from the web anyway, alive and well and working down in the San Diego area, some few miles south of here. So now we come to the birth. And happily, this birth was not at all painful. It was slightly before my time, but there were still some nice memories when I became a student. So this is what I'm defining as a birth. It's a paper here, an IBM technical report, for which a thousand copies, I don't want to exaggerate, were printed. According to Jane Cullum, whom I was talking to recently, and who was a collaborator of the editor of this, Ralph Willoughby, there was a great number. It was the biggest selling, if you like, IBM technical report of its day, and was requested by a great many people. And that was held, I'm not expecting you to read this again, but I'll just say that it was September 1968 that this meeting was held, and the proceedings are shown here. This matrix here is a 32 by 32 very sparse matrix. Let me run our algorithms on matrices of that order at this time. There are two bigger matrices in that conference, a 57 by 57 and a large 199 by 199. And we really did try various algorithms on these, not at that time, even a couple of years later. So, one thing about these doing talks in this way and not having an overhead projector is that you don't get advance notice of what you've done, and when you've just had a nice meal and that, you sometimes have to be reminded of what's coming next. So this was organised at Yorktown Heights in 68, and some of these people are still quite active just now. Bob Brayton, I think, is doing something in Berkeley, not too much. Fred's still very involved in working up in Umeå in Sweden and various places. But poor old Ralph, I'm sad to say, who edited the proceedings, his obituary appeared, so you can gather from that the fellow is dead already, unfortunately. And Jane Cullen wrote a very nice obituary for Siam News in 2003. In my opinion, Ralph was very much the father of sparse matrix technology in the sense of trying to define it as a field and not as an individual application. I guess one should be politically correct and think of who the mother of sparse matrix technology would be. And that's actually a little harder, because something that would not resonate very well with Siam and many people today is that every single speaker in this sparse matrix symposium was male. I didn't realize that until I looked over the proceedings just recently. People have been talking about this. All right.
That's the other
factory.
It is a little harder.
Right, of course, the fact that they can hear me doesn't mean they can understand me because of the accent, maybe. I thought, well, you know, it's a sort of working, I guess. Yeah. Yeah, so possibly the person who could be credited with being the mother and are willing for suggestions on this might be Elizabeth Cuthill of the Cuthill McKee algorithm, who was working in Washington in the, some sort of vaguely naval place in the 1960s. So that's a picture of Ralph that was in the Siam News article, and Siam managed to dig one out of the archives that I could project on the screen. The one in the copy wasn't of enough resolution. So I'm not. I'm going to read this out to you because I think this is what makes it clear that this was the start of sparse direct methods. And I'm probably the only person in the room that can read this because it's kind of small, but I think I can. So it says, in searching the literature for references on the use of sparse direct methods, a number of things became clear. For one thing, in the general numerical analysis periodicals and books, direct methods have usually been considered only for small full matrices, while large matrices were handled by iterative techniques. On the other hand, and this is quite important, in a number of quite different application areas, sparse direct methods have been extensively developed and made a part of programming packages. So it was recognized there was quite a lot of work having been done, and I mentioned a little bit for the linear programming area and ODEs before. There was some stuff being done, but it hadn't really crystallized as a topic until I claim this meeting. I'm going to go over the contents, and I guess that even in the front row, well, maybe people with good eyesight in the front row. But I'll just mention, in fact, I won't mention it. One aspect which was rather important and really fascinating, and I recommend, if you contact me, I can maybe get a copy. I can't find anything on the web which I haven't found yet. I would be planning to scan in my own copy and make it available because it is so interesting. And one thing that was very interesting was a panel session that they had at the end or during this meeting. One of the people in the panel session was Cleve Moore, and there's a quote there that says, he confesses, he said, there were some questions put in writing to this panel. So he confessed that he himself had put in one of these questions because he actually wanted to answer it. And it was on matrix scaling, and I'll mention that in the next slide. So, quite a few. Sometimes you wonder how much one's developed over the years. And one wonders maybe what one's been doing all the time, because back in 1968, well, there was talks about hybrid methods, not quite what we're talking about in a session tomorrow, nevertheless, combining iterative and direct methods in some ways. A scaling which has been mentioned already in this meeting, which is a scaling that essentially makes the diagonal entries 1 and every off-diagonal less than or equal to 1, was mentioned by Alan Hoffman, not with any algorithm, but as being a good scaling that could be developed by solving a linear program, which is true. Was being talked about then, long before the original paper by Olszewski and Murat. Using single precision to get full accuracy, that's now becoming very popular again, as we talked about then. And many forms of ordering, tearing, and partitioning these schemes were also being discussed there. versions of Markowitz, modified versions of Markowitz, which are not very current, but not long ago people were working on these, were already being discussed at this birth meeting. In terms of the software and papers in sparse matrices, again, they were only just starting really to come out. There was the first sparse direct code, really was probably that of Fred Gustafson at IBM Yorktown, who was working with Bob Brayton for developing, for solving stiff ODEs, and the code was called GNSOIM, I don't know how you pronounce it, but that was actually interesting because that generated linear code for solving the system. So there was a paper on that back in 1970, and a general paper on sparse elimination, it was a product form and elimination form being discussed there, and variability typing, which is very important if you're in a situation where a parameter is varying but not changing all the entries of the matrix. All that was being discussed in papers then. And on the other side of the Atlantic, I mentioned Alan Curtis with stiff ODEs, and John Reed and Alan had started developing codes for general sparse systems. And the unsymmetric code MA, this was both in 1971, and the unsymmetric code that was in fact being used for stiff ODEs again. So after a birth, you normally have the christening, and the christening, in, at least in our part of the world, happens about a year after the birth, or maybe one or two years. And the christening was really my baptism as well, because this was the first meeting I was at, which was a conference in Oxford, St. Catherine's College, in 1970. And that was the proceedings that were edited by John Reed, the proceedings. So now we move into the infancy, and around this time we had the first theses, which were really on sparse direct methods, or largely so. Probably one of the earliest ones was Alan George's, and he was developing various techniques in conjunction with finite elements. Even by the mid-1970s, there really was only about three widely available sparse matrix packages. There was a Hubble subroutine library, and I called it HSL, SparsePack, and YSMP. Again, the Hubble library was being developed. Primarily the main interest was still in solving problems from chemistry and transport and chemistry, sort of pollution type problems, in fact, which were stiff ODEs from Alan Curtis. So there's a whole range, and of course we continue to this day to develop HSL. YSMP is the Yale Sparse Matrix package, and the first I could see of it was the Alonzo Livermore user guide by Andrew Sherman, one of the authors of that. And the SparsePack package was George and Lewin. Esmond, who was here, then appeared as another author in the second release in about 1980. There was a conference around 1982, and the sparse software catalogue there, which was prepared by Mike Heath, listed quite a few codes, although some of them were not that easy to get hold of and certainly not very easy to run. Now we move to the mature time, and there's a list of... In fact, as far as I know, there's not really other books, so there's quite a big gap here on sparse matrices. Conferences, we had conferences every other year or even more frequently on sparse matrices. Most of them had proceedings, and this is a list of the proceedings and the editors of the proceedings. I just want to highlight a couple of things here. The survey that I did in 1977 for IEEE, it was quite amusing. I had 604 references back in 1977, and it was meant to be general sparse matrix research, but Gene Golub was not very enthused about it because I had very little mention of iterative methods. So although it was meant to be generally, it really was mostly direct methods. And it was Ralph Willoughby that, in fact, spoke to IEEE. They wanted him to do the report, but since I was a young fellow at the time, he thought it would be better for me to spend many hours preparing that. The other thing maybe here, oh, this is wonderful. These, I don't know who's been involved in them, who's in the room, but in these days, some computer vendors like IBM seem to have lots of money, and they like to spend it in holding fairly regular every year. They booked out this skiing hotel in Austria in the summertime, and the attendees all got free board and lodgings, the speakers got free board and lodgings and travel, and the organisers got a little bit of money on the side as well. So they really were very lavish institutes. And we had several of them, and one in particular in 1990 was on large scientific computations. It was essentially sparse direct methods, or sparse methods. I've just got one slide on the turbulent times, or the teenage times, and I want to put this up. I don't think it reflects that well on me. It was in my younger days when I was more aggressive than I am now, but it does illustrate the kind of, let's say, we're trying to establish the field of sparse direct methods. Iterative methods have held sway for time immemorial, as I mentioned, and so we couldn't help but get some digs in. So my talk, this meeting on flows and primordial media then, was on large sparse asymmetric matrix but direct methods. And the punchline that I used then, which I've had quoted back to me since, which was just before an even younger fellow than me called John Wallace was about to give a talk, I don't think the guy quite ever recovered, was this. And several times. I'm going to skip quite fast, I think, through the rest, because I just noticed, I wasn't Margaret, I was noticing just the clock in front of you, and that's about 5 minutes or so. But, just to mention to people, as I talk about maturity, this is about the only slide that I'm using in another talk, and it's really to emphasize that sparse direct methods are quite powerful. This is just simple kind of finite difference discretization of Laplacians in 2 and 3 dimensions. And in 2 dimensions, you can see that you've got almost linear. Oh, cha-cha-cha-cha-cha. It's a tricky one. Almost linear in the order of the matrix. That's for storing it and for solving further systems. That's rather important. 3 dimensions, as people like to point out, isn't quite so nice, but not as big a disaster as you might think. This is for using nested dissection ordering and sparse direct method. Well, I can't help but mention that several people said you must be talking about multifrontal as well, so I couldn't resist having a couple of slides on this. The original paper paper was by Spielpenning in 1973. The work was done and it was reprinted as an Urbana-Champaign report in 1978. And this was really a breakthrough from what had been done for actually quite a long time before. I mentioned irons in 1970, but before then as well, there was a lot of work on essentially band matrix methods, frontal methods, and this was the first big break from this, where you didn't have a single front or wave front. Most of the ideas of multifrontal were in this paper, although a little bit jumbled up and not quite as thought through as happened later. But there was no numerical experiments even in the 78 reprint, although it mentioned the use of the method with some problems. And then from that time, or after that time, there were lots of developments in sort of multifrontal methods, and I list some of the papers here at the time. I don't know which ones to highlight there, but there was work being done on both sides of the channel, both sides of the Atlantic. And then the paper and code that I was doing with John Reed in 82, I think finally established this as being a method that was later developed and still used in many, probably about half of the sparse direct codes nowadays are using some form of multi-front code. The main aspects to highlight are the fact that we use it for all the phases and have a stack for intermediate frontal matrices. Of course, when you're running stuff in parallel, this stack is not quite a stack anymore, but it was for the serial case. And an important aspect is that we were doing these what's called bounded bunch Kaufman parallel algorithm, this type of thing, which was effectively a root pivoting that Mike Saunders exploited later in LU Sol. The interesting thing was that 1982, that was about the time when that software catalogue was published as part of a sparse matrix meeting. So there were a few other codes around, but really, again, we couldn't get hold of codes to compare this new code with, apart from old HSL routines and YSMP and SparsePack. So, you know, a lot of things have happened since 82, I close the history there because most of you in the room who have got, are familiar now with the current happenings. And if you're not, then you can probably still sign up for the Combinatorial Scientific Computing meeting that starts tomorrow and overlaps with this meeting. I'm sure take money, let's say. Along to that meeting starting tomorrow. There's other things, it's not just sparse matrices, but a lot of the Combinatorial Scientific Computing community does work on sparse matrices. So I think senility, yeah, I forgot about that. Resonating. Well, you'll be pleased to know, Mr. Chairman, that there's only, I think, one slide on that. I think what's happening now, and it'll become apparent in some sessions tomorrow as well, the sparse direct methods are now being used coupled with other methods or as part of other methods. Several talks today were on things like multigrid and domain decomposition, other techniques where direct methods do appear and are the driving engine behind these solvers. And there's no question that iterative methods by themselves, as we all know, don't work in general. You need something like a very good preconditioning or coupling of a direct solver. And direct solvers have trouble certainly on three-dimensional partial differential equations, for example. So I think this is the sort of future now. And all this hostility that we had between people doing sparse, then doing direct methods and iterative methods in the late 1970s, early 1980s, is, I think, just about being forgotten about. Well, that's unless John Wallace catches up with me in a dark night after my talk in Andover. The conclusions are that we've had a short, distinguished and very active history. There are plenty many future research challenges. It's interesting that Ralph Willoughby in 1970, let's say, 2 or 3 or so, was encouraging me to work in this area. But he said to me, we've probably got about 10 more years of this topic before it's exhausted. So Ralph might have been the father, very bright guy, but he didn't quite get that one right, I don't think. So, thank you.